Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
All right, folks, welcome back to the latest Not Must Wire football podcast. Week 3 recap, MWWire.com's website if you're like, hey, who are these guys? We're talking about the Not West, Matt. It's Matt Jeremy are hanging out. And first off, Matt, you have to be having a pretty good Saturday night, Sunday, correct?
Yeah, it's been a pretty pleasant day out.
Pleasant? That's it? Upset in UCLA, just pleasant?
Well, I mean, it puts a little extra pep in your step for sure.
Heck yeah. Unlike my team, which I saw this coming a mile away, but I'm surprised how it happened with Utah losing to San Diego State. So we'll get to that as well. So you're happy. I'm like, I'm not a fool what Utah was supposed to be this year, and they're not that at all. So, but at all these games this weekend, two conference games, some good results, some not so good results, some we'll talk about New Mexico, but I'll classify that as not totally embarrassing. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I mean, I think in the broad strokes, you know, you look at the result, which was, you know, 34-0 in favor of Texas A&M, and you think, okay, well, that bet about what you expect, about how you expected it to. And so you start kind of contextualizing it as best as you can. You know, you look for the silver linings and you look for like what it actually says about both teams. And so, like, to me, the big takeaway is, you know, Texas A&M, elite defense. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. Oh, it's really good defense, yeah.
Yeah, because you know, you look at the fact that, you know, New Mexico, you know, on the game, I think they only averaged, what was it per play? 2.1 yards per play. 122 yards of total offense. But, you know, I think that probably says more about the level of talent that the Aggies have on defense, where – you know, they had four sacks, including, you know, a couple from, you know, future NFL guys like, you know, DeMarvin Leal had a sack and a half. Aaron Hansford had a sack. And then they also had 11 tackles for loss as well. And,
yeah. You
know, and Terry Wilson, you know, even though he completed under 50% of his passes, and, you know, he had the one kind of bad mistake with the interception. But other than that, I think it was just more that A&M was playing a really suffocating brand of defense than anything New Mexico was doing obviously wrong. They just kind of got out-athleted, you know, out-coached. And, you know, when you sort of recognize that in the broad strokes, you start looking a little closer at like, okay, well, what actually went right? And, you know, I see, you know, some of the young guys that we've talked about in past podcasts, you know, making the best of less than ideal circumstances. You know, case in point on the offensive side of the ball, Aaron Dumas had another nice game, you know, 10 carries, 49 yards, had a couple of, you know, big runs.
Yeah.
You know, Tavian Combs forced, you know, A&M into its kind of one glaring mistake in the afternoon. You led the team with 11 tackles. Had the interception when they were able to get pressure on the quarterback, Zach Calzada. So, mm-hmm. You know, the some of the guys that we've been seeing, you know, step up and make plays continued to do so. And so I don't think you necessarily, you know, change your opinion on these logos one way or the other too drastically. I think we're definitely going to learn a lot more from them, you know, as they as we get a little further into conference play in the coming weeks and things like that. So we've sort of seen, I guess you could say that they've met kind of our preseason expectations to this point. Like they've shown the propensity that they can beat teams that they should beat. And, you know, maybe they still have a ways to go.
Houston Baptist.
Yeah, they still have a ways to go to be able to kind of, you know, pull off some of the feats that we saw elsewhere in the Mountain West this week. And I think, you know, next week's game against, I believe, UTEP is going to be kind of the biggest litmus test of, like, how far this team has progressed. Because they and the Miners, we'll talk about it more in our recap podcast later in the week, but they're sort of in the same boat, I think, through three games into this season, where they both definitely showed improvement, which should make for, I would imagine, a very even matchup all the way around.
Yeah, it's like 34-0. It was, what, 28 points? 28 points, not expected. And it took the foot off the gas the fourth quarter. This is just a slow burn, 14-0, 24-34-0. I'm not surprised by the result. I thought Wilson might have done a touch better, just because 33 yards isn't really good throwing the ball at all. So you would like to see a couple of things here or there, but third down was reasonably okay, 6-17 against his A&M defense. That's not great, but it's not like just terrible and awful. So they got a few chances here and there on third down. But like, A&M might be playoff team this year. Like, they might be able to win SEC West. You know what I mean? Like, they're that good of a team. And we'll see what happens up for them. But it's like, the result's not, like you said, it's what as expected. But it also wasn't a 56-3 loss or something embarrassing, even though this wasn't really all that close. It wasn't like you see 34-0, A&M did what they're supposed to do. It wasn't a shellacking like what's unfortunately it's been going on like UConn or other teams who are not very good and like it's not nothing like that or like what who did NIU play Michigan and Michigan scored like 10 touchdowns versus NIU or something and went like 60-10. It's nothing like that. So it's not it's a bad loss, but it's not an embarrassing loss. We'll say that. And did you see, is the early line at UTEP really -2 UTEP on the road? UTEP is favored?
That's what I'm saying. Like, you know, the difference between UTEP and New Mexico, at least in the eyes of Vegas, is basically home field advantage.
Mm-hmm. Good old rivalry game, too. That'll be a good one as well.
I think it'll be a sneaky, entertaining game. I'm looking forward to talking to it about it.
Yeah, it should be good. Yeah, it'll be good stuff. It'll be at worst, a competitive game for New Mexico. They could win and be sitting at 3-1. Like, if they're 3-1, heck, who wouldn't want that if that's the case? So We'll see how that goes. Not much more to say. So let's go to, what's the next? My freaking drive, my box score is weird. Nevada, Kansas State. I guess we have to talk about the inefficiency of the offensive and defensive line of the Wolfpack. Is that where we're going?
Definitely a disappointing result, yeah.
John Peterson, where were you? Where was that? I'm not just pointing him out, but the whole defense, like, they could not stop the ground game at all.
Can we stop for just a moment and point out that Dom Peterson actually had two TFLs?
That's why I was kidding. This is like the one big name. It's like, come on, Dom Peterson. Because I thought, here's the reason why I bring up. You did not let me finish it. I'm not to blame it on him, but he's a big guy, everybody knows. And I saw on Twitter a bunch of NFL guys, look at this guy, he's just pushing these guys around, knocking about. And he did. Two TFLs is good. I'm not doubting that. I'm just kind of half jokingly, half kidding, step up and stop the running game. And I know it's not all him. He had three tackles, two for a loss. He had Hentley as well. Dion Hentley had 11 tackles, 7 solo. It was just like a group effort where they couldn't stop what they're doing. Like basically, Deuce Vaughn ran at will against them, as did Joe Irvin as well.
Yeah, and you know, to your point, Dom Peterson had two tackles for loss, and the rest of the team had one.
One. I know.
and it's sort of galling in particular this matchup, just because, you know, other than the 68-yard touchdown pass that the Wildcats had to open the scoring in the game, that was more than half of their passing yardage in the game. Like, you know, the quarterback Will Howard, only 7 of 10 for 123 yards. You know, their longest pass other than that was like a 16-yard screen to Deuce Vaughn in the first half. But they didn't need it because Nevada got bullied up front. Especially on the defensive side of the football. You know, Vaughn had 127 yards, Irvin had 82 yards, and Howard himself had 52, and you know, the three of them had 4 touchdowns. That was basically the entire offense right there. It was like the least flashy, non triple option offense that's, you know, that you'll see anywhere in the country. And it just did not matter. You know, they knew Nevada didn't really give themselves a chance to get off the field, you know, and even when they did push.
That's not true. That's not true. Time of possession was 50-50 essentially.
Well, this I wasn't thinking in terms of time of possession. I was just thinking in terms of just like how methodical Kansas State was. And so I think, you know, the more accurate thing that I look at is the fact that they were, you know, 5 of 9 on third downs, which considering how often they ran the ball, you would have expected that they'd at least get it to third down a little more often.
Yeah, it's a problem. But look at the other side of it. Like, they couldn't run the ball themselves. Like, Tuatawa, Dante Lee did nothing. Or Devontae Lee, excuse me, hardly did anything. Their longest running play is freaking 8 yards.
Yeah.
That's the problem. Like, think of this. Like, Kansas State, yes, they have, like, they beat Oklahoma the last couple years. I know Bill Starr's not there. It's Chris Klieman, their head coach now from North Dakota State.
Yeah.
And we know what they want to do, and they have some better athletes, but it's not like Kansas State is a superior, gigantic team. Like, you're telling me, like, this result, whatever, they lose 38-17, surprising by the margin of victory, especially that fourth quarter we'll get to where they just, when it was close and they give up 21 points. How are they going to do this against San Diego State? How are they going to do this against San Jose State? And even, like, your Fresno State Bulldogs defense is playing much better. How are they going to move the ball on the ground against those three defenses, which probably in the same ballpark as Kansas State, adequate Aztecs and San Jose State probably better than them.
Possibly. Well, that's like, the problem, isn't it?
That's a problem. Yeah, it's going to be a problem when they're going to be can't run the ball in. Maybe they can chuck it deep all the time, but Carson Strong was efficient. Dubs got his and everything in Stouffville, some deep plays, but you can't just throw it down the field the whole time and expect it to happen.
Yeah, and I mean, it worked for a little while. Like, you know, Carson Strong didn't really make that many mistakes. So, like, would you agree or disagree with that? Like, even the interception he threw was more a consequence of Cole Turner, I believe it was, falling down on the route than it was anything else.
No, Dubs had 121 yards, a 50-50 yard. I know there's the other non-QB throw with the Torrey Horton 44-yard pass, that completion to Stovall, but he was fine. Like, you would think if you're telling me Carson Strong completed 27-40 passes, I would expect about 300 yards. Mm-hmm. So that's a minor thing where I figured there'd be more. This is similar, not quite, but kind of in that vein of the Hawaii game last year where he was like 20-26, but only had like 220 yards.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like that. I'd expect a little bit more downfield. Like, overall, yeah, those numbers make more sense with that 44-yarder, but he wasn't terrible, but he also wasn't like he – we'll bring up Jake Kane all the time. He didn't pull a Jake Kane or throw 430-something yards and will the team a victory while losing the hip on the field. He was fine, but he wasn't great. And that's a problem when your offense rushing attack is non-existent.
Mm-hmm.
They average 1 yard a play, 1.1 yard technically. 4 feet. Every time they get the ball, they went 4 feet. That's not enough.
Yeah, and, you know, another thing that didn't help, too, is they also had, you know, more penalties than the Kansas State did. And that's the kind of thing where they aren't typically like a very undisciplined team, but they just seemed sort of out of sorts once they fell behind.
Well, it's the fourth quarter. It's like the game. This game was going into the fourth quarter, it was tied.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's coaching. I don't know if that's depth wearing out, but in the fourth quarter, like literally nothing. Like, they didn't move the ball. They had what, two possessions in the fourth quarter? Because Kansas State had 3 long drives that took their drives. Here's the point where time possession, like you mentioned earlier, where they hold the ball. The fourth quarter is when Kansas State dominated the ball. They held it for, like, my math right here, what, 4-10, overall, was it 10 minutes they held the ball?
They had 10 and a half minutes in the fourth quarter, yeah. The game really hinged on it hinged on that first drive in the fourth quarter where they had 4th and 4 at the Kansas State 41 and got 3 yards because nobody could get open. And then Kansas State immediately took it down the field for a touchdown to go up 2 scores.
Oh, you say immediately. It's a methodical 6-minute drive.
Yeah, you know what I mean, though. You get my point. Like, you know, they turn around and turn that turnover on downs into points.
Yeah, both times.
Well, yeah, and the second time was just like a four and out because, you know, they couldn't move the ball on that second drive.
Like, they couldn't get Cole Turner open on the fourth and three or fourth and four. Like, I don't know. The fourth quarter, like the first three quarters was fine. They're tied game, close game, but the fourth quarter, the Kansas City defense tightened up even more on them. And they only had the ball twice, and they did nothing twice. And then the defense for Nevada couldn't hold them. They have those extensive drives. That's part of it too. Think of it. Four plays, you're back out there on the field again, four plays again. You're tired, you're gassed. You're on the field for, 6 minutes of playing time. That's probably really 15, 20 minutes at least. You know what I mean? You're on the field for the whole fourth quarter. You can't stop anybody. It doesn't matter if the team's this good or some whatever level of competition. Like, being a good team hurts you. It could be any team. But if you're on the field that long, it's going to hurt you and they'll make plays on you. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the main thing in the fourth quarter. The offense, like, I don't know if that's a Jane Orvell thing. Like, now, I know they can't run the ball, but you got to do – I don't know. They got to draw something else a bit better and not go three and out or four – I guess four and out in these two situations when you have the receiving grouping. Like, you had four guys who were really good. Like, Melkon Stovall doesn't get a ton, but he's good. He had seven catches, heck, best game in a while. You have Dubs, you have Cooks, you have Fortin. You have four receivers who are really good. And I don't know. Cole Turner had just one catch. Torrey Horton had three catches. Like, it's all credit to Kansas City defense to slowing them down that fourth quarter because they put up passing, did well. The freaking rushing game couldn't do anything, and that's kind of been like if we were looking at the weakness throughout the year or off season coming in, we kind of felt the running game would be a step behind, but nothing like this. Nothing.
I mean, I think the results is a reflection of Kansas State, you know, maybe being a little better than everybody thought than it says about Nevada. I think, you know, Kansas State out-schemed them in this game and kind of asserted their will, if you will, just to be able to run the ball and say, okay, we're going to keep doing this until you can stop us. And so when you look at
they dominated Stanford week one. That's part of it too, Pete. Stanford's better than people think, and they crushed them 24-7.
Yeah. So, you know, I think it's fair to say too, maybe especially given the last couple of weeks as well, that Kansas State is better than Cal was.
Everybody's better than Cal.
And so I think, you know, this is not necessarily the kind of result that's going to necessarily doom the Wolfpack's chances at claiming a championship or something like that. But I can guarantee you that everybody in the Mountain West is watching that game closely or will be, you know, aware of the fact that, you know, if they game plan properly, that Nevada can be pushed around on the ground. And that's something that, you know, I'm assuming they're going to try and start working out on the practice field. I believe they have a bye this week, right?
Yeah, Boise State in 2 weeks.
And then they get Boise State in 2 weeks. And we'll talk more about the Broncos in a little bit, but that's going to be a big-time game for both teams for some very significant reasons.
I have not completed my, like, overreactions, but I think I came up with one now. Can I call Nevada just done for the conference championship? Is that too severe?
I mean, if you're looking for an overreaction.
That's the point of it.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I think the realistic thing is, you know, they got punched in the mouth, and so now the question is, well, how are they going to respond?
There's that too. I'll put it there. But it is overreaction because what I mentioned earlier when they play San Diego State, San Jose State. Well, we'll talk about Boise State's defense, who Jalen Warren rushed over whatever 200 yards, a couple touchdowns, cut whatever he rushed for a ton of yards. And that's what I'm going for, man. I'm going for the overreaction. I can, why not? It's early enough where I can make some bold swings and be fine. But the rushing attack and defense, rushing overall, it's like, what's Greg Bell going to do against this team? I mean, what's Ronnie Rivers going to do? Like, Tylan Evans could have a field day. Like, there's going to be some problems here. So we'll get to them later. We'll talk about all that later. But overreactions, it's extreme. Well, I mean,
so then what's your overreaction for the Cowboys based on this result? 45-12.
So I have it right here, man. They're going to lead them conference in scoring per game. Why not?
Okay.
Hey, 95, that may not be bold enough because that's 95 points in two games, right? They put up 50 versus NIU, 45. They own the MAC. They're going to be the MAC champions.
Huh. They're the best team. They both play in the MAC West, right? Ball State and Northern Illinois.
I couldn't tell you.
I forget where the Cardinals play off the top of my head. But yeah, you know, because I've seen the same thing going around about like BYU and San Diego State being
Pac-12 South
champions. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, this game was sort of complete domination from start to finish. Obviously, I think, you know, you could say the Cowboys let up a little in the second half, but you know, in the first half when Ball State was ostensibly going for it, like they ate the Cardinals alive on both sides of the ball, right?
Another pick six on defense there. Chad Muma. That's one of our questions. Is he the early favorite for defensive player of the year?
I think he's on the short list.
Yeah.
Like he's not a runaway pick because there is no runaway pick yet, because there are several people that I think we'll probably touch upon nearly all of them throughout the course of this podcast. But yeah, Muma's playing great right now. That too.
Yeah,
you know, obviously, pick six, you know, the pick six is grabby, but you know, he also leads the conference in tackles right now too. Muma does. You know, he had 12 in this game, and obviously that's like the, you know, kind of the major contributions. But you know, you look elsewhere and you really see that this was a team effort. You know, Easton Gibbs, the other linebacker, you know, had eight tackles and a sack. You know, Ravonte Holt had a big game with five tackles and 2.5 tackles for loss. Solomon Berg had a sack. You know, they basically just, everybody who was expected to be a contributor did something in this game. And we didn't even mention that Keon Blankenbaker had a pick six as well. Like it got bad enough to Ball State that they benched their quarterback, Drew Plitt, after going only 8 of 14 for 60 yards.
This Wyoming team, like, this is sort of overacted, but not really. But we've discussed this before, like with San Diego State, if they have a good decent quarterback. Wyoming, okay, yes, they scored 14 points off direct points, not even short field, but two touchdowns off of turnovers. Mm-hmm. Their offense, if they have any resemblance of a passing game, it's pretty good. Like, they've kind of had that. Like, when they had Josh Allen, they were obviously really good. And Brian Hill was there. That was obviously the reason why they were contending for the Mountain West Championship. Like, that's why they are right there. They have that again now with Sean Chambers. Not that Chambers is going to be a Josh Allen, but he's 14-23, over 200 yards. They throw it to, what, eight, nine different receivers? Mm-hmm. Like, they're swinging around. They're going downfield. And the offense is matching the defense just about. And so that's what's going to make them a contender, because we always felt preseason it was Boise State, Wyoming. That's about it. There's more teams in the mix up and down. But the way they played offensively, they're a team. Like I said, the Mountain West is really good. There's a lot of good football out there for a lot of conferences with all these extra players back, I should say. That's not necessarily the case with Wyoming, because Sean Chambers has been around. Xavon Valade has been around. Receivers were new last year and they weren't that great. So this isn't like a team that's loaded with 6-year guys that are coming back to play. Their depth is probably
It is, though. And that was what we talked about coming into the year, is like, you know, obviously, you know, they weren't getting the level of production that they hoped for in 2020, but we knew this was one of the most experienced teams in the country. And after some kind of early rust, you know, the offense was a little shaky against Montana State. And then the defense was shaky late against Northern Illinois. This was the first time that I would say that they put it all together. You know, because the offense.
Well, I just mean, like, there's not, like, yeah.
Because the offense was, you know, was good enough to take advantage of the opportunities presented to it. You know, Sean Chambers, you know, had another, you know, I would say above average game, 14 of 23, 201 yards and a touchdown. You know, between him, you know, in a ground game in which, you know, not necessarily a ton of big runs. You know, obviously, Xavon Valade had a 33-yarder. But, you know, Valade, Titus Swin averaged over 4 yards carry, and Diawan McNeely got into the mix with 6 carries and averaged 8 yards per. It was an all-around quality performance. And kind of to your point about how, you know, we aren't necessarily expecting Chambers to be Josh Allen, I think it is worth noting that at least through 3 games, and I'm not looking to raise anybody's expectations too far.
Do it. But
Chambers' passer rating through 3 games is almost exactly the same as Josh Allen's was when the Cowboys won the Mountain Division in 2016.
That's fair. But also to recall, Josh Allen's part of that too is passing percentage, which his is not, wasn't all that great. He was like 55%. Like for the year, I'm looking right now, that year in 2016, for 56. The year, he was only 56%, 15 interceptions. So they don't need, like, if he could be, like, not that he has to be better what Josh Allen could bring to the table, but throw a little bit better, throw about 60% and don't have as many interceptions.
Yeah, I mean, I guess what I was trying to do is I was trying to put, like, you know how good he's been in context, because been pretty good. You know, he's been a pleasant surprise, and I would imagine it's only going to get a little better for him against UConn next week.
Everybody's favorite. I need to make a quick tour trip at the over.
I think what we've seen, especially in the last couple of weeks, is that that side of the ball is coming into form in the way that everybody expected that that they hoped it would in the preseason.
Yeah, that's what offseason was saying. The passing game, like, we're going to pass the ball a lot. We're going to get everybody involved, and they did. They had this game with 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
So they don't necessarily have like the season defining win on their ledger just yet, in the same way that like a Fresno State does or something like that. But they're starting to play at a pretty high level. And so, if they maintain that into conference play, then, don't let the Cowboys sneak up on you, because they're sort of rounding in the form, I would say, and they're not going to be scared of anybody because their competitive window is wide open.
So they have a bye before Air Force, and they host Fresno State. Are they going to be 5-0 when they host Fresno State?
I think they could be,
because they get UConn and Air Force on the road.
I mean, Air Force is never easy. Obviously, we'll talk about more about them in a little bit. But yeah, I mean, if Wyoming plays the way they against Air Force the way they did against Ball State, then yeah, they're going to be 5-0 by the time that game comes around.
Just don't do a Montana State, right? They can't do that.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, so let's move on next game here. What do we got next year? Is it a surprise victory of the weekend?
That is correct.
If you saw this coming, you're lying, people. Coach DiGio didn't see this coming, winning 22-6 over the Fighting Toledo Rockets. let's see, the Rams defense showed up, at least on the ground game. The passing, no touchdowns. The secondary could be a bit better, but 6 points. Like, this is the defense we felt would be, because we always said they'd be good. They had freaking 10 TFLs and 6 sacks.
This is the defense that I expected to see.
Yeah. And this was, wow. Like, I tuned in a little bit. I'm like, oh, they're not going to win. I'm like, what the? I saw the score. I'm like, holy crap. It's close at halftime. You kind of see what's going on. But Toledo moved the ball in the air a little bit. But, yeah, you see 22 of 36 for what Bradley did. But he was harassed all night. There was little to no running game, like 21 yards total, and that includes sack yards. Like, this defense in the front was going crazy. Like, McBride had a sack and a half. You had Kamara with 3.5 sacks, or three and a half TFLs, couple sacks, 2.5 sacks. You had everybody out there making plays. It was, and they, when they were missing players too, like when I did the preview, like they're missing a couple linebacker, missing guys in the first half who, due to targeting, they may not have this guy, they may not have that guy. Like, they didn't have a running back in there, but what the heck? What is David Bailey doing? Where does this performance come from? 30 attempts, 132 yards. Santeo had a pretty good job on the ground. He didn't throw very well, but he didn't need to. They didn't have Dante Wright. Like, they didn't need to just throw it to McBride. He had 9 of the 11 catches were to him. He was their main target, and Toledo could not stop him at all.
Yeah. Well, okay. So let's take that through one thing at a time.
If you were surprised by David Bailey, it's
because you hadn't been paying attention. You know, part of why David Bailey hadn't really had the breakout performance yet is because Colorado State had been trailing in most of the time in the games that they played.
Not my fault. I'm just saying.
And so, you know, he's a guy that looks like he's getting stronger from week to week. And, you know, if that's an element of the game that they can hang on to, then, you know, between him and Santeo, who pitched in with 62 yards himself on the ground, like that'll play in conference play. You know what I mean?
The reason I felt it was bad, not bad, but the reason I was surprised, yes, he's improved 46, 80 to 132, but 25% of his yardage came on one play versus Vanderbilt. So that's why I'm like, to have him improve, like, double the carries, which is amazing, and keep the production fairly level, that's why I'm kind of surprised that he didn't have a big swing of yards. He only had a 15-yard long play. And so it wasn't like, all the yards matter, but he wasn't boom or bust guy or getting most of his carries like he did versus Vanderbilt when, like, 20 yards out of 80 was long play. He was more efficient and more consistent in his ground game. So that's where I'm surprised about how he kind of overall was able to do that. That's kind of what I'm getting at.
So I still don't know how concerned I should be that they seem to rely upon nobody else but McBride and Dante Wright. And you mentioned that Wright didn't play in this game. But, like, you know, 15 targets and nobody else on the team has 3. You know, Bailey had 3 targets out of the backfield. Like, that does not strike me as something that's going to play in the long run.
No.
So, you know, like, no. I think they could get away with it against
G. Scott. One catch minus 3 yards. No. Would work well.
Yeah, you know, and Toledo was dealing with, like, you know, some defensive issues. They were sort of out of sorts, I'd say, on both sides of the ball. Like, they didn't really get much pressure on Santeo that I can recover. I know they had, like, a handful of QB hurries, but they never managed to bring him down. And so, you know, you look at the fact that, you know, they were 4 of 17 on third downs, for example. You know, they scored on all 3 of their red zone chances, but that's because, you know, Caden Camper ended up with 5 field goals, only 2 of which were from beyond 40 yards. So they didn't necessarily capitalize as much as they could have on all the opportunities that were presented to them. And the defense was doing such a good job that it didn't matter. But that's the kind of thing where, like, if they can't get that sorted out, you know, then that, you know, that right there is the difference between, you know, winning another game like this, you know, by punching it in for 6, you know, a little more often versus, you know, maybe the defense falters and all of a sudden you have another Vanderbilt game on your hand or something like that. So still a lot of question marks, but, you know, that defense and special teams, which, you know, we didn't even mention Thomas Benunzio with the 70-yard punt return, and Ryan Stonehouse having another quality game averaging over 50 yards a punt.
Like, yeah.
Defense and special teams, I think, was always designed to lead the way, but the offense has to do a little bit more to do its part. And, you know, same as we talked about with New Mexico a few minutes ago, I don't necessarily know how much we're going to learn from their game against Iowa next week.
Yeah.
But, you know, we'll sort of kind of wait and see, I guess.
Yeah, that's the thing. So, like, getting inside that close and not getting touchdowns, not that they're, like, inside the goal line. There's a there's the field goal from the, 29-yard field goal, and they had the – they weren't chip shots. They had, like, one or two that were pretty close. I guess two of them. But there's really only two. The fourth and goal at the six, like, the two field goals from 30, like you mentioned, short ones. Punch those in, it looks much better when you have 30-6. He scored four more points each, eight total. But you're right. Like, if there's a game where they settle for field goals because they can't get close or some whatever, they get stuffed. And then also special teams touchdown as well. So their offense wasn't really that great moving the ball. Like, they were, like, 7 points on the return, all the field goals, two short field goals. Yeah, this still leaves the offense a lot to desire, despite Bailey having a good day on the ground, because Centeno throwing the ball wasn't very good. Mm-hmm. He was pressured a bit, but never got sacked. Like, his combined yards fine, but 11-27 is not good enough. Like, Toledo's apparently not very good this year. They're not a good football team, but it doesn't matter. Neither are the Rams, and they get the victory, it's good, but there's a lot of areas like he went through, like the third down conversions, so many field goals, not finding extra receivers to throw the ball besides three guys on the field. They can't do this against a team that's better when they play in conference like Utah State or Boise or Air Force or Wyoming, everybody in the mountain except New Mexico, essentially. Maybe even New Mexico, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Lobos and Rams aren't that far off, and so it's good to get the win, but there's a lot to look at to where if they play somebody who can move the ball a bit better on the ground or something, they're not going to come away victorious, because Bradley threw it reasonably well. He's efficient throwing the ball, 22-36. Their rush defense is great. They got to the quarterback. Defense is really, really good. But I'm not trying to be downer, but there's areas where they could still improve. So here's a good thing. They get a victory while still not playing amazingly great, particularly in offense.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I'll put it. So there we go. All right. Is it time for Utah-San Diego State?
That it is.
Okay. Did you see Darren Revelle try to mess with me on Twitter apparently for some reason?
I did not.
So he put out there, and I was wrong, but it's just so funny because somebody bet the over-under was 44.
Oh, like, I did see that.
It goes to triple over.
I did see that.
And so the dumbest thing is, like, it goes to triple overtime, and now in the third overtime you have to go for two. So that makes whatever. But it was 44. The guy he's like, that's a bold bet. 66,000 for the over, or excuse me, for the under. And most people are like, that's not bold. This game, it's like, whatever. And I'm like, I know why he replied to me, because his mentions are probably set up. If you're verified, he'll see those more often, because that's how you can make your mentions be that way. And so mine probably popped up. And he's like, dude, he's like, bold. I'm like, have you even seen the Aztecs? And then he writes back, you were wrong or something. I put back, I'm like, okay, it's not my money. I don't care. I still don't think it's that bold of a bet to take the under. Yeah, 66 grand. But I'm like, dude, like, it was just funny that he came back and said I was wrong. I'm like, okay, it's not my money. I don't care. It's not your money. But the only reason they got to 64 points, however, there's only 16 points in overtime. But here's the truth about this game. The Aztecs nearly blew this game and did not play well in the second half. Well, excuse me, the fourth quarter they did not play well. They had a big lead, a two-touchdown lead. Utah needed a touchdown, and a two-point conversion just to go to overtime. That's not good for San Diego State. However, they still played well. They still beat Utah. They dominated the line of scrimmage, particularly the rushing defense, because Utah's Micah DeBernard had a long of eight. Their running back had a long of eight and only 47 yards. They knocked out Cam Brewer, or excuse me, not Cam Brewer. I got to get mixed up. Cam Rising, Charlie Brewer. Charlie Brewer played like trash. And like, okay, you knocked the starting quarterback out, but this was a game where Aztecs are as good or, well, they're better than Utah, but their defense is what we had said, Matt. Their defense is going to stop Utah's rushing attack, and they're going to run the ball with Greg Bell, which they did. And my man Lucas Johnson came and got the victory. Just saying. Make him the starter, right?
I mean, okay, 10 of 19 for 44.
I know. I'm just kidding, half kidding. Hey, did you see his 87 rushing yards? 54 yarder was pretty impressive.
See, okay, I'm wondering I'm the only one that got like really strange vibes watching this game.
In what way?
Like even when Utah was rallying, I never really had any belief that Utah were actually going to win this game.
You know what? Neither did I. And I like want my Utes to win every game they play, and they were playing so bad. I did not like the 2-point conversion. I'm like, what the? How did? I'm glad they did. Cause I'm like, oh, overtime, Utah, great, awesome. But I had no confidence in what's going on for them because, like, looking back at when they played BYU and even when they played Weber State, they gave up. They were pushed around against freaking Weber State. Special team miscues, which happened here because San Diego State had the kick return or the return for a touchdown with Jordan Bird touchdown return. Like, yeah. They had that huge difference for him, 100-yarder. So I knew they'd get pushed around because Aztecs are. The defense, San Diego State and BYU are fairly similar. They got some big, they're kind of a similar strength and whatnot. So I knew it'd be close, but then special teams came into play. And I figured, okay, their defense should be good enough. And I knew Greg Bell gets some yards. Like, Greg Bell didn't have, like, this off the chart day. 119 yards is still good, but it's not amazing. You know what I mean? Like, it's solid, but it's not like what he's going off for 150, 160. So that was good enough, but I just don't trust Utah's offense, and it's been the same for a decade. Like, for quarterback play, not to go into too much Utah stuff, but, like, outside of having, who was it, Tyler Huntley 2 years ago, and even him, I didn't trust him until halfway through the season when they went to the Pac-12 title game. Like, they have not had a good quarterback since Brian Johnson was there, or even a good offense, because freaking everybody here knows about Andy Ludwig. He was at Utah before. He was at San Diego State for a couple years. There's a reason he's not a head coach anymore, because the offensive play calling is not great, but I never felt like, yeah, I kind of felt Aztecs that fourth quarter wasn't good because Utah made that run. I'm like, oh, here they come, and what's going to happen? It just felt the fourth quarter wasn't.
So calling it a run feels like really charitable, in my opinion.
Hey, 14.
It was 14. Like that fourth quarter was agonizing to watch, but it's not because Utah was blowing San Diego State out of the water, in my opinion. Like, yo, okay, so I'm gonna put this in context for those of you who didn't watch the game. So, you know, to your point, you know, you said there was like, the first three quarters where San Diego State was up 24-10 and, mm-hmm. you know, they knocked Brewer out of the game. They were, the defensive line was the term Eaton that they use a lot of, yeah. Or Ezekiel Ed or whatever. You know, Cameron Thomas was all over the place. Caden McDonald was all over the place. They had three sacks in the first three quarters. But even when Utah rallied, like it still took Rising 26 passes, you know, 16 of 26. He only threw for 117 yards.
I know.
They didn't necessarily run the ball that well. Like they only averaged 4.6 yards per play in the fourth quarter. The problem was that San Diego State's offense suddenly got super anemic, and it wasn't like outside of Bell, they were exactly lighting the world on fire. You look at the fact that their lone two third down conversions in the game were third and short. Like once it got to third and five or longer, they basically had no chance to extend the play.
Yeah, because Lucas Johnson can't throw the ball very well.
Yeah, and of course they had the one lost fumble in the fourth quarter, which played a huge difference. It was just like it was so strange to watch because like you saw Utah making the comeback. But you still didn't really feel convinced that they were actually going to be able to like win the game in overtime. And, you know, when it got down to it, you know, they had the one kind of nice play. I think it was the first overtime to answer with the, I think it was, what's his name? Dixon had the one play touchdown catch or whatever. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the questionable play call they had once it got down to that 2-point conversion scenario, it was like a really kind of low percentage. Not even a goal line fade, just like a out route just inside the goal line stripe. not the call I would have made.
No, nobody.
Yeah, not like I said, not the prettiest performance in the world. But you know, and I give most of this credit to the Aztecs defense, which you know, 8 tackles for loss, 3 sacks. You know, yeah. They stepped up and they made plays when it mattered most. You know, and even when Rising was kind of rallying the Utes late, you know, they also had 8 pass breakups as a defense as well. And a lot of that is owed to what was a very stingy secondary, and they played the second half of that game with without Patrick McMorris, who I believe got popped for targeting and was ejected, wasn't he?
I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah. So
Raising played well, but he wasn't moving the ball down the field. He moved them to score, but he wasn't going downfield. His, like you mentioned, his total yardage wasn't great, and yards per attempt wasn't great. But it didn't matter. He moved it well enough to get them back in the game for Utah. And San Diego State's defense, it's bold. The defense kind of stumbled in that fourth quarter. But the offense ran out of 10 plays.
Let's not forget about the special teams, too. Like,
recovery touchdown.
Yeah, Jordan Bird had the 100-yard kickoff return. Matt Ariza had 10 punts, and 5 of them landed inside the 20. 5 of them went for over 50 yards. He's been lights out.
Yeah.
And he made a field goal from 51, and, you know, so you look at the fact that, like, he missed the one in overtime. Obviously it worked out, so it wasn't necessarily a huge deal. The one that he missed in the fourth quarter was from 48 yards, so it wasn't like that was necessarily a gimme either. Yeah. He's continued to have an excellent year. And so, you know, you have to wonder, like, okay, I would imagine they're going to give Brookshaw back the starting job when he gets healthy. And I'm assuming, like, if he's healthy next week, that we'll see him back under center. But for the most part, like, I felt better about the Aztecs coming out of this game than I did coming in, just because, you know, they leaned on their strengths. And even when things got dicey, like, they found a way to win. You know, by doing the unexpected. Like, we haven't even talked about the fact that they pulled out the Philly special
in the third overtime. The end around toss pass back. Hey,
yeah.
Do what you gotta do, you know what I mean?
Like, that's not something you would ever think about from a San Diego State offense, but they made it work.
Yeah.
So it was a good game all the way around for San Diego State, like, you know, which is sort of strange to say when you consider they gave up 31 points. But, like, they were on a Utah never had it easy in this game.
Oh no, they made it harder themselves.
Why I felt like even when San Diego State was kind of playing it close to the vest down the stretch, I still felt like they were going to come out and win the game.
Yeah, I did too. Like, even Utah coming back, I'm like, okay, when it got to overtime, anything can go because you're 25 yards out. So yeah. That was concerning, but like, I still felt Aztecs were playing better. Just the fourth quarter wasn't ideal for them for the handful of plays that ran. But so what does this put? Like, I kind of overreact, like, Nevada out of the title race. Not really, but the way they played, not great. Does this convince you Aztecs are better than people thought? Because Utah's not very good this year. They lost to BYU, who's obviously really good. They struggled versus Weber State a little bit. They struggle here against Aztecs because they can't move the ball on the ground. The passing game wasn't great. They had to score on special teams to keep it close. Do you think the Aztecs, the way they played, can beat Nevada, beat Fresno State, beat San Jose State?
I think we saw kind of like the best possible version that, you know, to date last week against Arizona. And this week's version, because they were without Brookshire, is definitely a little more compromised. But, you know, this is a team, like, I think they would have lost this game if they had played it like last year or 2 years ago.
Like, they would have faded down the stretch or something?
Or they just would have given up one too many big plays or something like that. This year's team, like, they're, you know, if they're not the number one contender, like, they've definitely proven that they belong in the mix a little more so than some other teams that I think we expected to be more in the mix and that, you know, have more serious problems and just haven't been able to overcome them to this point.
Okay. That's good. They're like, well, I mean, a little bit. Like I mentioned, we mentioned years of Aztecs get a little bit better QB play. And the Arizona game is ideal where Brookshire, I forget what he was, but he's, what, 10 of 18 or something, just above 50%, throwing just enough yards, no interceptions. So Johnson brings a running element to it, so it's a little bit different. But we'll see how it goes. But I think the way the defensive front played, like, they – like, we didn't – mention, like, how many TFLs? They had 8 TFLs, 7 QB hurries, 3 sacks. Like, they were – dominant defensively. Utah didn't, they threw for 257 yards and 3 scores, but it wasn't anything downfield, really. They had a couple handful of plays over 10 plus yards, but the biggest play was just that 25 yarder to Jalen Dixon. So it's like, whatever, that's fine. We'll give that up. But like I said before, last week coming in, Brett Keithy's the only guy that didn't catch the ball very well. They did have, Brent Covey finally showed up, but it's funny, he had 8 catches, but for only 46 yards. It's like, that, what is that about? Yeah, totally does. He did have the kick return for a touchdown, and his one receiving touchdown was a pretty good play. I think that was his long play, but he's not a downfield threat. It's like, give me 5 yards and hopefully I can out-juke you and spin and go downfield. So they help handle them pretty well, and so it's a good win for San Diego State. They're 3-0, and they have one more non-conference game, right?
They host Towson.
Oh, never mind. But moving on. Next game, where are we going here?
That would be our first conference game of the year.
The best game of the day, perhaps? Most exciting
game of the day, that's for sure.
Aggies are 3-0 for the first time since 1978, which partially because they'd always have to play the bye games every week till October, essentially. So it doesn't help the Big West days. But they, this 36 second half points, Matt. They were down 24-13. I'm like, God, this game's over. Air Force is going to run the ball, take care of business. But no. Utah State's offense, like they, what is, should my other overreaction be that the two quarterback system actually works for once? With
they didn't bust that out on purpose. They busted that out because Logan Bonner got hurt.
I know. I'm just saying. Let me have my overreactions if I want. That's why I can be a little sneaky about it. But no, I did see that. But I was like, I am surprised at how well that. I guess both play, but how well Peasley came in and like, oh, you got a touchdown. Give me like 3 touchdowns. I'll give you multiple touchdowns and I'll take your job. So that was a kind of, not a surprise, but a surprise how well he played off the bench. Because you expect, okay, you're not playing all game. You might get expectation, like if we look at prior games, he'd get a couple plays here or there. But he comes in and does extremely well. And Air Force just, their defense, which we thought was really, 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 really good, may not be that good. May not be as good as we thought. Because give up, second half was not good for them. You know what I mean? Like I said, 36 points. Offense, if their offense scores 45, they expect Air Force to win. I don't remember. I'd have to look it up, but I don't remember the last time Air Force has given up this many points. I remember, what was it, the Navy game a couple years ago? It was like score for score, and it was like 49, 42 or something like that. Whatever, well, everybody was scoring touchdowns.
I think you may be overlooking the fact that both of these defenses gave up over 600 yards of total offense.
I know. I haven't gotten the Utah State's defense. I'm just going off. I'm getting there. But, yeah, the other defense played well. Come on, you give up 40-something points each? Nobody's playing well defensively.
I mean, I think what surprised me the most is that Air Force wasn't able to get more consistent pressure on the Aggies. You know, they did manage a couple of first-half sacks, you know, both of which came from Vince Sanford. That was pretty much it, though. Like, they didn't really get a lot of pressure on Bonner, you know, until he got, you know, whacked during the touchdown pass to Justin McGriff. But, you know, even once Peasley came into the game, like, you know, they made a couple nice plays, and that was pretty much it. I think that, to me, was the more surprising thing. And the fact that, you know, Calvin Tyler Jr., I think, sort of complimented this. Like, he's another guy, I think, we talked about with David Bailey a little bit ago, has really come on strong week after week. And I think, you know, his emergence kind of makes the Blake Anderson offense the best possible version it can be. You know, 19 carries, 132 yards. You know, he had the 61-yard touchdown run that really kind of sealed the deal, put them up on top for good late in the game. But, you know, this offense can go places. Like, that much seems apparent. And, like, to your point about, you know, maybe not necessarily a two-quarterback system, but now they know they have quarterback depth. And that was something I put out on Twitter, you know, during the game. Because, you know, Peasley, you know, he had a couple of nice stretches last year, but, you know, for the most part, you know, it was very uneven. He looked sharp in this
game. Bonner's a mess. He got chucked in there for no reason. That was difficult last year.
You know, Bonner got nicked up, Peasley stepped in, and the offense didn't miss a beat. And that, I think, is the best possible compliment you can give to Anderson and to offensive coordinator Anthony Tucker. Because they found ways to spread the ball around. Like, four different guys caught 5 touchdowns from Bonner and Peasley.
Tom, you know, deep pass, man. Oof, that ball, yeah, that was nice.
That was a pretty pass, wasn't it?
Yeah, was it 72 yards, I think, 70 plus.
You know, and Brandon Bowling has kind of, you know, come out as being like, you know, the conference's ultimate security blanket. You know, 9 catches, 136 yards, 2 scores. Justin McGriff pitched in with 6 catches on 8 targets. You know, Carson Terrell played limited snaps, but he had two catches and a touchdown. Like, this is a complete offense that you know, did well to move the ball pretty much at will against a defense that came into this game looking pretty sharp itself. So, like, it's a credit to Utah State that they were able to get the upper hand and never really relinquished it.
Yeah, and then we had the end of the game, the Justin Rice fumble to basically seal the victory with, what, 2.5 minutes left?
Mm-hmm.
So that was a clear 49-45. He gets the fumble, basically take the game over. But, again, you're right. Like, that's a good thing. Like, we knew the quarterback competition was close because Peasley and Coach Anderson said, poor, it's good. Peasley, Bonner, we're not sure yet. They'll both will play. But them coming in and playing, like you said, not – who knows if Bonner played the whole game, he had 5 touchdowns. Maybe he did. Maybe he threw for 450 yards and 5 touchdowns, whatever it may be. But it doesn't matter because it does matter that the depth is there. So if there is an issue with injury, there's no concern. Mm-hmm. And so that's huge. The running game, you're right. Like, I don't know what happened to Vontae Henry Cole. He's even on the team. He'd even getting carries like 2 weeks ago. It's like, I don't even care about him anymore. And you got Tyler there running the ball. So, like, you talk to me, like, they, like, how's shocked, like, that they're this good. Like, nobody thought they'd be this good. They thought we all, everybody predicted them to be like basically above, probably above Colorado State. You know what I mean? Nobody thought they'd be like on par with the Rams, essentially battling for third. Like, this is a team where, why can't they beat Wyoming? Why can't they beat Boise State? Why can't they beat whoever they play out west? Scoring 49 points against a defense that's really good, they're going to be able to, like, when they play Wyoming, heck, not to say they'll score 50, but you can put up some points with them being more well-rounded, as you said.
I think they're going to have to prove in conference play that they won't break or that they won't bend quite so often now. Because, like I said,
yeah, that's a problem.
Air Force had over 600 yards of total offense too, and they were hitting big plays left and right. It seemed like, you know, not only, you know, in the on the ground, which, you know, you might expect that. But, you know, they had 8 carries that gained a combined 265 yards on the ground, including, you know, 3 different touchdowns, 2 of which were from Emmanuel Michael, who, you know, to be perfectly honest, I had never heard of him until he was running for 51 and 55 yards to pay dirt. You know, so they were just like, they were hitting big plays. Like, even like from the get-go, they had on their very first drive, 3rd and 9, you know, Zeke Daniels finds a 59-yard pass to Kyle Patterson to set up a touchdown. You know, he has a 56-yard touchdown to Micah Davis in the second quarter. Air Force pushed them just as much as they pushed the Air Force defense.
Yeah.
The biggest difference in this game was that Utah State made big plays when it counted where Air Force couldn't. And I think that, you know, obviously the forced fumble at the end is the biggest one that changes things in terms of like win probability. But don't forget too that, you know, Air Force had a turnover on downs. I think in the first or the second quarter that they had that drive?
It was early on, yeah, somewhere in the first half. I don't recall when.
And then they had the interception that Justin Rice had. That very could have easily changed the tenor of the game too. So it's one of those things where, you know, a handful of things go differently, and this is a different result, I would say. Both teams played well.
Only 4 points, so yeah, 4 points.
Yeah, or maybe it wasn't a goal line stand. I might have been thinking of, like, they held them out of the end zone or something like that. I might have been thinking about a different game. I apologize.
Sure, but, like, there's a million things that could go differently. Like, had Utah State not gone for the fourth, like, there's a couple of things here and there. It's a 4-point game, and you score so many points, things are going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, like, you know, Air Force had its way on the ground doing what they want to do. Like, as a team, they averaged 6.9 yards per carry. That's pretty good for Air Force, especially considering that, you know, to that point in the season, they'd been sort of lackluster on a per-carry basis. But, you know, Michael had the big plays. Brad Roberts went over 100 yards with 20 carries. You know, he was the hammer. Zeke Daniels also contributed again on the ground. In between what he did in the air and on the ground, 270 yards of total offense. Like, that, too, is pretty good for an Air Force quarterback. So, like, the result obviously didn't go the way that Falcons fans hoped that it would. But, you know, both teams look like they're plenty capable of being a thorn in the side of any team that we thought would be kind of like those top tier contenders in the Mountain West. So neither team is likely to, you know, to make it easy for anybody else.
No. And like end of the game, like when I felt, when I saw what happened, like Utah State third, fourth quarter, when it was 45-34, I kind of thought the game was over.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, oh, 11 points, there's not a ton of time left. You know what I mean? Like it's getting time to get, it's fourth quarter, with 10 and a half minutes left. They need two scores. Mm-hmm. And the offense shows up, a touchdown fairly quick, three plays. It forced a quick turnover, the six play and punt. Like they came back and scored reasonably quick. Like both those drives took under two, took basically 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And we knew they could quick strike because they had 72 yards before they moved the ball. So I actually felt like, okay, Air Force defense, because prior to that, they had the interception, they forced a punt. Utah State's offense was kind of sluggish a little bit. They mm-hmm. weren't playing extremely well. So I kind of felt when they got that touchdown, Air Force did, I kind of thought it was over. But Aggies had a second wind in them to go down. But, like, are they going to win the Mountain Division? I don't know. But why can't either team beat anybody else in the Mountain Division?
That's true. The break can be a factor one way or another.
Like, who's your favorite in the Mountain Division? Is it Wyoming at the moment? Is it Utah State?
I mean, I think based on what I thought of, like, based in part of what I expected to see in the preseason and what I've seen so far, I try to balance both of those things. I would still say that Wyoming has the inside track. But, you know, I thought Utah State would take a leap forward. And, you know, based on how well they clean up, you know, we could be talking about a bowl-eligible team versus a team that steals a division, which, you know, we've mm-hmm. seen it happen in the past.
All right, well, we'll see. Yeah, I think that's – the Mountain Division's a bit – not that it's more as difficult as the West, but it's going to be more competitive than we thought.
Yeah, I mean, if this is any indication of what's to come, I'm, like, super excited to see what comes next.
Heck, yeah, I've been wanting the Mountain – the West Division, now the Mountain. Like, Utah State, Boise, Wyoming, Boise, Wyoming, Utah State, Air Force versus whoever. Heck, maybe the Rams will do something weird, you know what I mean? The defense could do
something.
Speaking
of Boise –
all right, I know. 21-20. Oklahoma State is victorious. Thanks to, not who's he going to say, but thanks to Jalen Warren. Former Utah State Aggie finally gets over on the Broncos. 218 yards and two touchdowns. Huge 75-yard run. All right, so do we need to talk about the one play, or does it matter? Is it more than the one play?
It's more than the one play. I mean, I know the scoop and score
that
was blown
play,
dead. Yeah, I understand. But and between that and I think it was the pass interference that was called in later in the first half, which enabled the Cowboys to cut the lead to one score.
Yeah,
you know, I think, you know, maybe that those two calls in part are offset by the fact that, you know, they had a really ticky tack roughing the passer called in the second half of this game.
That.
So, like, you know, those are obviously things that make fans irate. You know, like those, you know, blown calls or whatever you want to call them. But you know what the refs didn't do?
Play rush defense. Play defensive line.
Okay, let's talk first about Jalen Warren. Let's talk first about that running game, because it's important to remember this was a scoreless second half. Neither team scored.
It was.
And Boise State's defense after halftime did its part. You know, they held Oklahoma State to 3.8 yards per carry. You know, they did have some trouble on like third downs, like the Cowboys were still 6 of 12 somehow, but you know, they didn't necessarily move the ball at will. Like, you know, Spencer Sanders was only 5 of 7. And I think maybe that was the biggest difference in the game because he was 1 of 6 in the first half. Like he was a non-contributor in the first half, more or less, aside from his legs. But, you know, after halftime, you know, the ground game that was, you know, working so well in the first half, 35 carries, 78 yards in the first half, 2.2 yards per carry. The defense did its part. The offense look like a mess. And to me, based off of what I've seen in the first few games, I'm starting to, are you starting to worry about this Broncos offense?
Yeah, because you mentioned in the winners and losers, hey, Jordan Sonny's healthy, they're going to be fine. He got, what, 20 yards? He couldn't move the ball. The offensive line couldn't do anything. Like, they could not there was no, like, part of it's like, okay, they're missing their center. That's a big deal. But your longest running play is by Hank Bachmeier, a 12-yard run. George Chalani had 12 for 28. Like, Habibi Likidoa had 27 yards. It's like their running game was non-existent. Their passing game was fine, but not great. But they had 61 freaking rushing yards. They couldn't do anything. Bachmeier was chased around the field again, 7 QB hurries, 7 TFLs, 4 sacks. The offensive line played like trash. And in turn, you can't have a good – I don't care who's back there running the ball. If you're not protected, if you can't get a chance to run, you're going to struggle. And that's a problem with Boise State. Again, like this is the third – this is the first time Helani's been healthy. We figured, okay, he'll be fine. But we figured, oh, it's just him not playing like last year. But no, it's more than just not having him healthy back there. He's healthy, didn't play well. The offensive line is not what we're used to seeing from Boise State. Or maybe it should be because – Hank Bachmeier,
they complain about it year after year. I think it is what we've come to expect.
Well, no, I'm just sorry. I'm just saying, like, it's been overshadowed where last year, whatever, but the year, I was getting to, like, that first game versus Florida State a couple years ago, Bachmeier was getting crushed as a freshman, but he still had a good running game to kind of overlook that. Mm-hmm. But now when your running game is not moving the ball and your quarterback's getting hit more and you can't move the ball on the ground, okay, I know it's an issue, but if your runners aren't able to do it as well – like, if you get 100 yards from Helani or your leading rusher averages like 90 yards a game, okay, but you're still getting hit and sacked a little bit, you'll overlook that and say, okay, it's just something here or there. But now when both are being bad, it's a huge more spotlight on that position group that's not playing well. So it's well, more –
it also didn't help that John Ojukwu got hurt in this game too.
Yeah.
It's just, you know –
but what would he have done? Like, if he's the whole game, would it have mattered?
You know, obviously, like, I think the concerns in the trenches kind of magnify everything else, but also, like, who forced Hank Bachmeier to throw that interception?
Is it, like, a UCF throw again? Like, what's he doing? He's a third-year starter. What's up with that?
No, that one was even worse because he had no pressure in his face. Like, he had a clean pocket. He just decided to throw the deep ball way overthrew his intended target, and, you know, right into the defender's hands.
I don't know. We give a Jack Sears moment. Is this going to be a changing or does? I don't think that would make a difference. Whoever's the quarterback, so it's not just hey, the quarterback, switch him out. Because again, he was 22-34, fine, 240. Like his stat line was okay, like not great, not bad, but it's not all him. But when he makes a mistake, when your running game can't do well, and your offensive line isn't stopping anybody, when you're punting every time in the second half, like having 3 and 4 yard plays, it comes back to something. Maybe it's the play calling. Maybe it's this. There's a lot of things going wrong with this offense.
Yeah, and like I said, you know, I felt like the Broncos defense gave as good as it got. Like obviously, you know, Warren going over 200 yards wasn't necessarily like great for their chances of winning the game. But they had 10 TFLs too. You know, like, you know, and they had some highlight worthy plays as well. Like, obviously, I think the enduring image is J.R. Skinner laying on that wide receiver trying to bring in a pass. Oh, yeah. But, you know, beyond that, you know, he led the team in tackles and had 2.5 tackles for loss. Kekula Kaniho had a couple tackles for loss. Like, the defense stepped up and did its part, especially after halftime when it would have very easily, you know, they could have very easily folded and they didn't, which is a credit to them. The offense just didn't get it done. The offense looks more one-dimensional than I think anybody on that coaching staff wants it to be. And, you know, as we mentioned earlier, it's not going to get any easier for them against Nevada in a couple weeks. Like, you know, that's a very critical conference game out the gate that they have to win, especially since other teams in their division are suddenly looking much improved. Like, you know, they've got questions to answer just like everybody else in the Mountain West. I just think that maybe those concerns are a little more pronounced than anybody would have expected at this juncture in the season.
So what's your main thing? Just the offense? I think the offensive line's the biggest concern because if they can't block for whoever's running the ball, Bachmeier will apparently makes it a weird or dumb error every game. I think that's where it starts out. Like, again, 7 TFLs, 4 sacks were allowed. I think that's where it starts up front because – you're right. The defense turned it around. Defense does need to play more consistent, clearly, because you can't give up 200 yards to anybody in the ground. But I think the offensive line's like, if I'm going to start with one area, I'd want that area to be better because that'll help multiple things. Because the defense proven they can make adjustments and get better throughout the game, which point proven, 0 point second half, hold Jalen Warren to well under his average from the first half.
Yeah.
So concern level is high for Boise State fans, as it should be.
I would agree with that.
Because they still have Mountain West play. They go to Utah State in 2 weeks. Like, that's no gimme now what the Aggies have done. Like, are the Aggies going to finally beat Boise State in the conference for the first time in a while?
We'll see.
I don't know. Here's their next stretch really quick. Like, how confident are you in this stretch? They have a bye. They go to Utah State, host Nevada, go to BYU, and host Air Force. That's pretty difficult.
That's tough.
Like, if you're telling me right now they go 2-2, I'd be like, okay, fine, maybe.
Like, they haven't looked head and shoulders above teams like they've looked head and shoulders above teams in years past so far.
Of those four games, would you say Boise State is definitively better than any four of those teams?
Give me those four teams again.
At Utah State, mm-hmm. Are they better than Utah State? Would you say, like, yes, they're better than them?
No.
Utah State. Nevada.
No.
BYU.
No. Surprisingly.
Air Force?
No.
No, Air Force? Okay. Could they be sitting at 1-5 or 2-5 after that stretch? Do you think that's even possible? 2-5, Boise State.
I think the story of conference play, and this is true of, and I think this is sort of true in both games that we saw in this week, you know, one of which we talked about, the other one which we'll talk about in a little bit. The teams that will win games in conference play are those that manage their liabilities the best, which I think means that anything can happen from week to week.
That's a good way to put it. We'll see if they go. They get their off week. We'll see if they can get together. But it's going to be, I'll say it throughout, like, it's going to be exciting. Like, that's why I think division winners could be 5-3. I don't think that's possible. We'll see. But, all right, should we get to the best game of the weekend?
Well, no. We got to touch upon one more first real quick.
Which one you do? Which one?
How excited were you to see Tate Martell take the field for the first time at UNLV?
Oh, I forgot about him.
Will you tell your children where you were when he came on the field for one play, ran for exactly 0 yards, and then was taken out with the Rebels already trailing 24-0?
What quarter was this in, first half?
It was in the third quarter.
I may have been sleeping at the moment. I don't know. I could have been watching for the better Fresno UCLA game. I like they put in your thing you wrote. It's like, what's the point? Like, you put him in, if that's your play, and you want to bring. But why is he? It's just mind boggling. If that's the play you call for him, that's fine. But he to never enter the game again, in maybe a similar situation on the road. They lose this score 48-3 to Iowa. Not as close to the score. Oh, sorry. Iowa State. My bad. I just hit the page. Iowa. Move on. Iowa State. What's there to say? Charles Williams ran, 42 yards. Couldn't move it very well. Quarterback play was an issue. Because they didn't have their starter. And neither... Why didn't Rodgers play? Was he hurt as well, or they just don't care?
He was the third quarterback in this game.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, so Brumfield was hurt. Rodgers was basically kind of demoted on the depth chart. So true freshman, Cameron Farrell made his first start and looked about as well as you would expect a true freshman to do, to look in his first career start against a team with as much talent on defense as Iowa State. 8 of 13, 1 interception, 67 yards, 3 sacks. Yeah, UNLV just basically have nothing to offer them on offense, and it was pretty apparent pretty soon. Which is sort of why it made the kind of sporadic appearances from Martell a little more confusing. Like, you know, why wait until you're down by 4 scores? Kind of change up to your offense. Like, if you think that he might give you an offensive spark, why wouldn't you do it sooner?
We're playing more often. He was 206. So, you know what I mean, like, he had a handful of plays, but it's like they were going to win it all. And so, like, the take out of this game is like, don't get embarrassed, and they were embarrassed.
Yeah, and I mean, I think a lot of that has to do, I mean, it's sort of like a more pronounced version of what we talked about a little bit ago with New Mexico. I don't want to make any sweeping proclamations about the Rebels, because like, I put it out there on Twitter as well, like, everybody knows, like, this is a multi-year rebuild, and everybody knew going into 2021 that 2021 wasn't going to be pretty. But then you look at, like, the fact that they've already used four different quarterbacks in three games, and you still can't help but feel like there's something wrong with the way the rebuild is progressing. And maybe some of that has to do with just, like, opponent adjustments, because obviously Arizona State and Iowa State clearly outclassed, you know, the Rebels at this point in their kind of build. But I don't think it's going to get much better against UTSA, and I don't know that it's going to get much better in Mountain West play, because a lot of other teams are looking more improved, while UNLV looks like it's just taking steps backwards. I just don't know how many of those steps backwards they're going to be able to recoup, even when the playing field ostensibly gets a little more level.
Not in the West Division. It's not. They're not like. I can see this result when they play all the West Division teams, right?
Yeah, like, I think Bill Connolly put it out there. Like, did you happen to see the stat that he put out there as far as, you know, likelihoods that every team goes 1-12 or 0-12?
I was looking. I saw you tweeted it out there. I was trying to find it. I was going to ask you. Isn't it like 10% or something?
Let me see if I can find it. If you can vamp for just a moment.
I'm looking. Like you, they had the undefeated. They had
19%.
20%. You used to go 0-12?
Yeah, UConn is 49%.
Oh, man. Sorry, Daniel.
Arizona is 30%. Navy is 20%.
You just lost to Northern Arizona.
And UMass is 3%. Yeah. And for the sake of comparison, we didn't mention it earlier, San Diego State given a 3% chance to run the table. So, you know, there's still a chance of that, too. But, yeah. So,
UTSA 3% as well, and they play UNLV.
Yeah, so it's just, you know, it's sort of like managing your expectations, but then in the back of your mind, you wonder whether things should be progressing like this.
So Cameron Friel is a guy he recruited, right?
Yes.
A freshman.
Yeah, he was a guy who came in early. He was competing for the job in the spring.
Just let him play. Forget Brumfield. What year is Brumfield?
No. I don't think that's what you want to do, though. I think, you know, if you thought that Brumfield was a guy, I think they're going to give Brumfield every chance to stick.
I'm just thinking, like, just let him take
like,
his
own I don't think they were turning to Friel or Martell because of anything that Brumfield did besides get hurt. I guess that's what I'm saying.
Well, Brumfield is a – oh, he's a freshman as well. Never mind. I thought he's older. My bad. I was thinking, like, if he's like a junior, it's like, just screw it. Go with the young guy for the rest of the way. Who cares? Let him build. So now, I have some – I guess the extra COVID year or whatnot kind of skews trying to remember what year of eligibility you technically are. So I thought he was like a – had like maybe 2 years left. So
yeah. It's – Long way to go.
Yeah, so play the long game, right? Is that what we're saying here?
Exactly.
Be patient and see what happens. And just, I know you got the nice new stadium. You get these good teams into town, but maybe, how about you ask Syracuse or like Vanderbilt to come to town instead? Or Illinois instead of a top 15 teams like Iowa State and top 20 team Arizona State to play.
I know Arizona State was on the road. Who could have foreseen Iowa State getting good, though?
However, I could have foreseen UNLV still being very bad. Just say you could see that too. That's more likely. But you're right. Like them being a top 15 team. I get it. But go with the traditional losers. I don't know if you want to play a Power 5 team. All right, let's do this. Let's go to the final. Let's go to the final game. Then we'll wrap up with UCLA Fresno. So let's go to the game of the island that started extremely late. It started Sunday morning on the East Coast time. Mm-hmm. San Jose State going to Hawaii, 19-13. Spartans win, 17-13. Apologies. In a close game where second quarter basically decided with the Spartans scoring those 14 points. I guess the good thing about Hawaii, Matt, is that they did not have to play from behind because they were leading this game at some point, 7-0.
Unexpected loss, though.
It was. Because if you look at it, Cordero threw the ball pretty well. Hawaii, whatever. DeeDee Hunter, whatever, 50-cent margin. Didn't play extremely well, but the amount of low-scoring points is the Hawaii defense actually played much better than we thought. Because you're right, because Tyler Nevins didn't – did he not play for some reason?
I believe he was unavailable because of injury.
Okay, I forget because I didn't really watch this game all that much. I just got some highlights and didn't – I just had a close game, whatever. We'll get to it later, but I didn't see why not. But he was out of the game. But the defense for Hawaii stepped up, like, a couple sacks, a couple – plenty of TFLs. They did not – like, Nick Starkle didn't go off for a huge game.
Like, no, I'm
under 50% passing, had the interception. Like, Hawaii's defense stopped Kyrie Robinson. Like, they – Hawaii played much better than the turnaround we expected from basketball weeks. Like, it's over. They're not playing well. They lose, but I kind of thought San Jose State would have put up at least 30 points.
This sort of looks like a game that – you would have expected Hawaii maybe to win because San Jose State's longest scoring drive, longest drive of the game, actually, was only 55 yards. Like, in terms of field position, neither team had an advantage, but it was just like that stretch in the second quarter where they strung together, two adequate drives in a row, scored a touchdown on both of them, and that was basically the difference in the game because, other than that, they had 4 3-and-outs. Every other time they got across midfield, Hawaii found a way to stall them. And otherwise, they didn't really do that much. Like, Hawaii actually outgained them on a per-play basis, 4.9 to 3.8. So it wasn't like, the Hawaii offense wasn't doing its job. It was just sort of a strange result where I wish I knew what the win expectancy was on both sides. But I have to imagine that San Jose won that with less than a 50% win expectancy just based on how the game progressed.
Well, that makes sense because it was close the way – they were – the second half, they scored no points. Or excuse me, the field goal, no touchdowns. You're right, like the length of drives they had. Like the first half, first quarter is all punt, 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 punt. Three plays, maybe six plays. Like they had half their drives in the first half were – outside of the touchdowns were punt or 3-and-out. I guess that's mm-hmm. three plays or six plays, essentially. And then they had the fumble, too, and Hawaii missed their chance to kick a field goal at the end of the half. It was a 48-yard, not a gimme, but they still had a chance to get the ball back with 10 seconds left. Cordero gets that pass to Kelvin Turner, an incomplete pass. They don't get any yards, but they're stuck at the 31. Had he caught that, maybe that would have done a bit more, clearly get closer, but you're right. The win expectancy with what Hawaii missed a field goal, the way San Jose State did not move the ball as efficiently as they did, and if not for a good second quarter, they would have been losers in this game clearly, because both touchdown drives, like you said, were what 44 and a 55-yard drives. That's it for the scores, as you mentioned. Yeah. Every other drive was like 0 yards, interceptions, 9 yards. Every other drive outside of, I think if I'm right here, two. They had that 46-yarder where they punted, just kind of held the clock for a while. That mm-hmm. eventually came up short. They got nothing because they were deep in their territory after the punt. They got their own 14-yard line. And so that was their only substantial drive of the game, really. You know what I mean? Everything else was short.
It was sort of like the inverse of last year's Nevada game where Hawaii looked like they solved what San Jose State wanted to do. They just, they weren't able to put all the pieces together to win it.
Is there a concern level for you for San Jose State playing? Or is this a thing where, like, Hawaii figured something out defensively finally? Because Hawaii's offense, like I said, they ran okay. Cordero was under 50%, but no touchdowns, no picks. This is clearly a defensive effort for why Hawaii won. Are you ready to say their defense is kind of where it should be now? Like, they kind of figured things out? Against one of the better offenses in the conference?
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, I think, San Jose State, and at least for 1 week, San Jose State and Boise State are kind of maybe in the same boat where, both teams were forced to be more one-dimensional than they want to. And I don't know how much of that you can contribute to, Nevins not being available. So, like, on the one hand, you see that they made an attempt to kind of spread the ball around as a result. I think it was like one, two, three, four, five, six, seven different guys saw at least five targets. but it didn't necessarily work out because, you know, Starkle completed under 50% of his passes. And even though he had the two touchdowns, it's like he wasn't that impressive. And, yeah. And in Hawaii was able to kind of force, you know, turnovers. I think what they, what was it, plus one, plus two in that regard?
There's one interception. Sorry, I don't have it exactly in front of me, but there's a, yeah, yeah, two, a fumble interception and one fumble for Hawaii. So
plus one for Hawaii.
Yeah.
So it was just one of those things where, like, you know, San Jose State, sort of since the first part of the Southern Utah game, like, they haven't looked like they've fired on all cylinders yet. I still think they have that capability. I just wonder, you know, what it's going to take for that to be able to come around. Like, you know, whether, you know, whether Starkle needs a reliable number one receiver that he knows he can go to down the field or something like that. Or whether they just need like a little more up front. Cause, you know, Cade Hall's been pretty quiet to this point in the year. And it didn't necessarily bite them in this game because I think both sides ended up with two sacks and five TFLs. So other guys have stepped up. You know, Nehemiah Shelton, you know, had a couple pass breakups. Kyle Harmon, you know, had nine tackles. So like, you know, the veterans did their part. But maybe they just need a little more from like the top tier talents, like the star power that we expected to see. But again, you know, they're going to be in the mix in the same way that pretty much every single other team we've talked about to this point is going to be in the mix. It's just about, you know, how well they overcome or just manage, you know, whatever their liabilities are at this point. And maybe that's, you know, a little more of an uneven passing game than we expected to see. And, you know, a running game that has looked like it's sort of regressed to this point in the fall.
Yeah, we'll see. We want to see a bit more from Spartans because again, I kind of said they'd take a step back a little bit because undefeated or 10 wins might be a bit too much. But here's the thing too. Imagine being a Spartans fan a couple years ago and you're like, oh, we not even counting last year, but they would have lost this game. It was like 3 years ago or even 2 years ago, really. And so, yeah, they didn't play great versus USC despite it kind of being close until the end. They sneak past Hawaii. Southern Utah, fine, but Southern Utah. They play Western Michigan. Maybe there's a reason. I was wondering why Western Michigan's a 2-point favorite for them. I know it's on the road, but they're Spartans are underdog on the road to Western Michigan next week, I should say. And Western Michigan is 2-1. Like the matchup predictor at ESPN has Western Michigan 79% chance of winning that game.
That's because the Broncos out there are a pretty good team. We'll talk more about them. But again, I said in the preseason, like it's still one of the non-conference games I'm looking forward to the most. San Jose State's going to have a shot, but I think I'm going to need to still a little more on offense kind of going forward.
Yeah, I know. Western Michigan beat Pitt last past week, 44-41. I just kind of surprised, like the offense isn't quite there. So that's why here's my point. Against any MAC team, I'm not surprised. I'm a little surprised, but against any MAC team on the road, it should be pretty even line, which 2 points basically is. So it's just, I think it's that low or that, I guess not low, but that number because Spartans offense hasn't done extremely well against an FBS team.
Yeah.
All right. Fresno State, UCLA. We told you, right? Every game day picked UCLA. They're suckers. They're a bunch of dummies. We picked the right team here. Listen to us, right? Fresno State beating the Bruins.
Every once in a while we get it right.
Give us more credit to that. Come on. Also, you should have drove to the Rose Bowl, Matt. Just saying. It would have been a late night, or late day. But, like, this game, like, we look at the Oregon game. Outside of two bad possessions, they even had Oregon on the ropes anyways. They probably should have won that game. They go on the road to UCLA, beat them. What did you put on there? They beat them 2 times in 4 years, something like that?
They beat them 3 straight times.
They're 2-2, essentially.
Now 4 straight times.
Against the Bruins recently?
Yeah.
Oh, it's 3 straight times. Why don't you tell me at the beginning?
Isn't it?
I don't know. I know they're rolling in seven figures a few times after this victory again. They keep getting paid. Maybe the Bruins will stop scheduling them. But outside, like, if we start reverse, this game is one of those games where Fresno should have not been in the situation where they're at. You know what I mean? Like that third
probably
quarter.
Probably not, no.
But the third quarter was not good. They only scored 3 points. They're up 23-10 at the halftime. they're up 26-10, and then, or excuse me, 23-10.
My math. I mean, a lot of that came down to the fact that Dorian Thompson-Robinson had his best stretch of the game in the third quarter.
Yeah, and that doesn't help. But this game overall, like the fourth quarter was like the last 4 minutes. So like the Fresno freaking fumbles and UCLA gets two touchdowns. It's like this game's over. They're down 30-26. I didn't think Fresno had in them. I'm like, oh good, Fresno's up. They get the touchdown, 33-30. Freaking UCLA goes down and scores again. And then Jake Kaner had 40 seconds to go 75 yards and he does it.
Mm-hmm.
With basically a broken hip. What the heck happened? Nobody says what happened. Did he have hurt ribs? Like, he was holding and clutching his gut or hips from the touchdown drive before. Like, do we know exactly what happened to him? Are they saying anything yet? Have you seen anything?
I don't know. I mean, I would imagine they're not going to disclose exactly what happened.
Well, I meant, usually you hear something about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't know that there's been any official word about it. We're recording on Sunday evening, the 19th of September. We'll probably hear something about it maybe tomorrow during kind of the usual press conference. But yeah, like we already knew that he could like absorb some punishment and keep slinging it. But this was just sort of like, you know, the defining moment of that.
Freaking. This is like this injury. Like it wasn't like, oh, I'm holding my brother. Like he came on the field the second time, was still like he's on the ground, getting hit, scoring touchdowns the drive before, throwing those passes. And then I don't know how he did it. But like he took that. You see the hit he took on the last touchdown, the game
yes.
winner? Jeez. Like, holy crap. Jalen Cropper, he's the man. Like this game, like it was just amazing to watch. Like we knew this would be an exciting game. It was on Pac-12 Network. So the limited people to watch it could watch it. But, like, this is one of the, like, this is not just hyperbole, but of the whole day, this is one of the more exciting games of the whole college football Saturday.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I know Florida-Alabama was pretty close. That was a really good game. Trying to think what else is out there. Like, Georgia Tech, Clemson came down a lot. Boring, but came down to the last little bit, what, 14-6 or something. But this game, like, back and forth, especially the last 5 minutes of the game, where Fresno's up 26-17, and they force UCLA to punt with 13 minutes left in the fourth quarter, it's 26-17. End up being 40-37.
Yeah.
They were, how many points is it? That's 34 points in the final 10 minutes or 13 minutes. Like the first time I was excited. Like even first, you know, like that first drive was that first drive where they had the overthrow pass to a wide open, I don't remember who it was. There's a wide open third and 11 pass in that first drive.
I believe so. Yeah. I saw a lot of people commenting on that.
They end up punting, like, oh, dang, we saw that last week or something. Like, dang it, they don't score. But then they just pushed UCLA around. Like, this overall, like, there's so much to talk about for what happened. Like, well, I guess the biggest thing I'll say, besides Jake Kaner throwing for, we should mention, 455 yards, two touchdowns, was that Zach Charbonnet had only 19 yards. He's been torching everybody, and people are like, this guy's amazing. Put him on the Heisman list. UCLA's 2-0. They're going to win the Pac-12 South. They still might. He was clearly shut down and could do nothing this game after his prior two games. 106 carries, 106 versus Hawaii, 3 TDs, 11 for 117 in the score versus LSU. He came into this game at averaging, what, about 13 yards per rush attempt.
3.2 yards. He looked pretty sharp in the early going.
Yeah. 17 for 223 on the year and 4 touchdowns. He did have 2 in this game, but they're all Jerome Bettis short yardage situations. Like the running game was shut down. Even during DTR had like 67 yards. Did okay. He passed. He had one of his better passing games of the year, including in that late in the game where he had that big stretch you mentioned. But Fresno's secondary had a little bit of issues guarding like Phillips and Brown out there and Cam Brown who had 111. But this was an offensive juggernaut. Teams like this is. There's so much to say. Go watch it. If you haven't seen the game, go back and watch it. Even if you watch the freaking highlights, it's like a 15-minute highlight package because there's so much happened. The defense, like, okay, I'll get to my most impressive thing in this game. As I mentioned, was the rush defense of Fresno State, because what Charbonnet has been doing, they shut them down. They get 3 TFLs. They don't sack DTR at all, but they suffocate the running game where. If you're telling me you're forcing him to throw the ball to win, I'm like, yes, please, all day and let him throw the ball against me. I don't care. But he stepped up and got the first or second a little bit. But stopping that ground game was the biggest thing in this game, because every other part of the game, they threw the ball well, they caught the ball well. UCLA's defense played pretty well. Like, they had 9 TFLs themselves and a couple sacks. They picked off Hayner once. Their defense played well. So that's the, if you look at any area for the reason this game turned out the way it was, mostly was UCLA couldn't run the ball very well. And that's kind of what it, overall, I know there's other plays here and there, but that's kind of a big picture, because had UCLA been able to run the ball, maybe Fresno doesn't get the ball back again or more times in the second half, specifically that fourth quarter.
Mm-hmm.
Like early, I know they scored like every play, maybe that wouldn't matter. They scored every time they had the ball essentially in the fourth quarter, but things could have been a lot different had they been able to run the ball. Like, maybe they don't need all 3 touchdowns in the fourth quarter. They only get 2 because they hold the ball for, they don't do a 3-play drive for 57 yards. It's maybe 9 for 57 takes 5 minutes instead of a minute 13.
Mm-hmm.
You, would you gloat about your team? You need to be excited about the victory. Come on.
See, I think the one thing that I'm most encouraged by in this game is the fact that, you know, you mentioned UCLA getting bottled up on the ground. To me, yeah, what made the one of the things that made the big difference was the fact that Fresno State wasn't.
Yes.
Which was something that I was starting to feel like a little bit apprehensive about, like, okay, well, are they as good at run blocking as they are at keeping Hayner upright? And ironically, Hayner took a lot of punishment in this game, but, you know, Ronnie Rivers ran for 136 yards on the ground and contributed a few more catches out of the backfield as well. So to me, like, you know, this was like, you know, the type of top-notch balanced offense that they needed. And even though down the stretch it ended up falling to Hayner, you know, I mentioned, you know, Thompson Robinson having that big stretch in the third quarter to pull the Bruins back into the game. But, you know, in the second half, Hayner was nails, you know, 18 of 25, 255 yards and the 2 touchdowns in the last few minutes. But I think on the whole, it's just, you know, the fact that the offense was able to come together in a way where, you know, the running game had been a little bit sluggish in weeks past, that gives me a lot of encouragement that Fresno State is definitely more for real.
It is. What does this to do overall for Fresno State then, like, the rest of the way? Because they beat UCLA, who's seemingly a pretty good team, because they're beating who they've beaten. I like the defense a lot, which kind of stepped – that's kind of my impression when I told you before. But, like, where do you think them in context of, like, San Diego State or Nevada? Because you put them number one, right, in power rankings. I did as well. You had them at the top. So, clearly we have them being pretty good. Do you – well, actually, let me back up. Like, what's your one concern about this game? Just what you still could do offensively, even though throwing the ball? Like, do you have a concern? Because – they won. That stretch in the fourth quarter wasn't great because they could pass well. But do you have any big overarching concern, deep passing plays, since they had a lot of those in this matchup?
I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, would it be cop out to say Hayner's health?
No, that's not that. That's, he's right now probably the best quarterback in the conference.
And I mean, you know, the reason I say that is, of course, you know, we've seen a little bit of Logan Fife in the opener against UConn. You know, Jalen Henderson has been, you know, more the primary backup more recently. But if either one of those guys is forced into more extensive action, you know, maybe, you know, they decide to take it easy on Hayner next week, because I think Fresno State plays UNLV next Friday.
Yep.
So, you know, maybe they decide to give Hayner some time to rest. So, okay, so what is the offense going to look like with a new operator under center? Is he going to be able to spread the ball around as much? Is he going to be able to, you know, complement Rivers on the ground? You know, is the defense going to go back to being, you know, the more kind of, you know, rigid kind of unit rather than one that bent a lot, especially in the second half of this game? You know, that I think was more reminiscent of what we saw a lot of last year. So again, you know, this is not necessarily a team that has zero questions going forward, but, you know, they should, you know, based on how they look against UCLA, relative to other teams' best looks so far this year, yeah, they've definitely got to be near the top of Mountain West contenders right now, at least.
I do as well, but because they have UNLV, then they go to Hawaii. They probably would want him for the Hawaii game, just because Hawaii.
Yeah,
they have enough. where we've seen them where they can make games interesting. Like, if Hawaii gets everything together, they can totally compete with Fresno State, particularly if there's a backup quarterback playing. But that's a week and 8 days. Like, it's a Saturday evening game, so you have the short week this week, which the way Hayner was holding his side, like, it was weird because it wasn't like – I don't know what it is because it wasn't knocked out of breath because he wasn't like leaning over. He was literally like holding his hips and upper stomach, like lower stomach area. Mm-hmm. So it has to be something where I'm betting he has some, hopefully just like a bruise or something. He's got hit an awkward spot in like the whatever bone that is, like your hip bone or something, or like your growing area. It's not even growing. It's like the outside. He's holding his outside. So maybe it's just a weird hit and it's bruised. Maybe that's all it is, a pretty bad bruise. Because it looked pretty gnarly of how he was kind of laying on the ground, bending over, holding that side together. So hopefully it's not – I don't think it's like a dislocated hip because how could you walk or do stuff like that afterwards? I don't think that's the case because that seems pretty unlikely for him to go out there and continue to play and walk. I'm just betting it was a weird hit. So don't play versus UNLV. But I think you're right. They're a contender. I put them at the top because who they beat and how they've been winning. So – I think that's – I would be shocked. Do you think – if you had to make a case for anybody else, could you make a case for San Diego State being number one maybe, or even Utah State?
I mean, I think you could probably make a more convincing case for San Diego State than Utah State.
Yeah, because Utah's better than Wazoo, and so there's that to consider. Okay. I'm with you, too. I put Fresno, San Diego State, Utah State, 1, 2, 3. No, I put Nevada in my top as well. I think I put Utah State 4 just because I'm still not quite there yet for them. Just because we'll see. In Nevada, I think there's still more potential for them to be better than not. So, all right. So anything else you want to add? We've gone fairly lengthy on a recap show because we have a million games we talked about.
I think we're good to go.
All right. We're good to go. So MWR.com, check it out. We got a million things going on. We have a couple of new writers talking about stuff on the website, but everybody apparently Matt's been visiting, so that's helpful. So appreciate that. Keep it going. And we'll be back sometime next week to talk about week 4 because we are getting into more league games. And, yeah, it'll be exciting. And, heck, man, check out any game you can get. Like, even watching the extended highlights, go watch these games because they are going to be great. Anything out west, even the Mountain Division now, Utah State being better, CSU. Yeah, Matt, maybe their defense will show up and stymie some Mountain West contender to like 14 points but still lose. I don't know. Just thinking out loud. But there'll be many games to watch and many games to watch for because they'll all be great. So we'll be back next time. And, yeah, until then, we'll just keep checking out our website. That's what we want you to do. So head out to MWR.com, and we'll see you next week.